I'll call us to order. Thank you all for joining us. A point of note, currently we do not have a quorum, so we will not be officially voting on any of the items presented today, but we still will hear all of our presentations going forward. So with that, I'll see Dr. Brantley, do you have any points or issues with the agenda as is?
No, I do not.
Awesome. And we'll move on with our first presentation. Item number two, the 2045 MTP amendment.
Okay, the 2045 MTP amendment is for the I-16 exit ramp removal, IMR, interchange modification report. Actually, this I-16X ramp removal project was included in the previous MTPs and even TIP at one point. But it got stopped because, City of Savannah put the project on hold. Federal Highway Administration refused to review the IMR report. So really no progress was made. City of Savannah kicked off, renewed this project last year. And then they applied for some earmark funds and they got the earmark funds so that they will at least kick off the IMR update. And then we did have a coordination meeting with GDOT. This time GDOT wants to take the lead in developing the IMR to prevent the similar situation like before, like FHWA refuses to review the report. So this way we can update the IMR and then follow up with preliminary engineering, probably a right-of-way acquisition not right-of-way acquisition because we can reclaim some land by removing the exit. And then, have the construction. So these are the benefits. They're going to reclaim some developable land, along MLK and Montgomery Street. And we will probably restore some kind of a grid system, so that will be safer for drivers, pedestrians, cyclists, and transit riders. And then restore MLK as an economic mixed-use corridor, providing connectivity between downtown to West Side community, something like this. So for the MTP, because in order for the GDOT to start to kick off the IMR update, the project has to be included in the TIP. But since now the TIP is a subset of the MTP, so before it can be added to the TIP, it has to be added to the MTP. So we are amending, at this point, we are only amending the IMR update to the MTP. So maybe when we... By the time we adopt the 2050 MTP, so there might be some specific recommendations that can be included if the revenue allows, can be included in the 2050 MTP. So at this point, we are just amending this IMR scoping phase into the 2045 MTP, and the total cost is about $900,000. The earmark portion is about $720,000, and the City of Savannah will come up with $180,000. Any questions?
You said something about the state wanting you to do something different than before.
Yeah.
You said something about the state wanting you to do something different.
What happened is in 2015, MPO, a core MPO, actually completed, we hired a consultant, and we completed the interchange modification report. But Federal Highway Administration was saying MPO is a planning agency. You're not the implementing agency.
True.
You're not supposed to do the IMR. That's what they were saying. Because you can recommend something, but it's not going to move forward. Because for one thing, City of Savannah doesn't have all the local funds. So if we do implement this project, it will be millions of dollars probably. City of Savannah doesn't have that fund. And then GDOT doesn't want to take up this project at that time, because it's basically we are removing, we are demolished the I-16 exit ramp removal to the downtown. So GDOT doesn't want to do it at that time. So, but, and then they just declined. They declined to even review the report. So we couldn't go anywhere. But this time, at least the GDOT changed their attitude. They say, okay, instead of, like having you, because City of Savannah applied for the CMARC funds. So City of Savannah can, like solicit RFP, solicit a consultant to develop this IMR report, but still the same situation. So you don't have like millions of dollars to implement it, right? To demolish it. So GDOT this time saying, okay, we want to prevent that. So we will be the lead. We will take the lead. So this is the first step. We will review the previous IMR and probably provide additional information to say what needs to be done, whether it's okay, whether it's feasible. If it is feasible, and we will develop the project. So we will come up with the, like federal dollars to deal with this project. And also with GDOT being the implementing agency, the Federal Highway Administration wouldn't have any excuse not to review the IMR this time. So this is what happened.
Thank you.
Only comment I have is that I'm extremely happy that this is still moving forward. I think it's really important for our neighborhoods and reconnecting them, the communities that were cut off by those highways. So thank you.
Yeah, I think we still have the original I-16 report on the MPO website. So you can see what would look like after we take down the ramp. So what kind of land will be put over there? What kind of proposed improvements will be there?
I have a question for Sally. We don't have a quorum, and I see myself and one other person. I don't know anyone who's on, you know, at home on the phone or wherever. Are we properly logging them in? I mean, are we?
We cannot make any motions.
They can't make any. There's actually nobody logged in, unfortunately, this time. But they're not. They wouldn't count as a vote. You have to be in person. But there's not even anybody online right now.
Okay, so we're only two people.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I just want to know that. Thank you.
So we would just present information to you, and if you have
that.
Comments,
I've been wrong. It's not my first ball game.
Okay.
This is my first rodeo. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We can move on to the next item.
Okay. The next item is the TIP amendment. Basically, this is one of the projects because we now that we amended this IMR into the 2045 MTP, now we can move it. We can start to program this project into the TIP. So we basically have, so we're adding the funds, the earmark funds plus local funds into fiscal year 2024 that starts on July the 1st. So we hope that the fund, because this is just an IMR, update, so it's a scoping phase, considered scoping phase. So the funds can be authorized pretty fast. So probably in July, we will get the funds authorized, and then the GDOT and the City of Savannah will develop MOU. Because City of Savannah, in this case, actually, it's not GDOT paying the City of Savannah. It's like GDOT gets reimbursed by City of Savannah. So they will develop an MOU, and then we will kick off this, and we will keep you updated on the process. Besides this project, we also have three other projects that we would like to update at this meeting. One is the US 17 Back River Bridge on Savannah River. The right of way is not going to make it in fiscal year 2023 because currently the right of way phase is programmed in fiscal year 2023. It's not going to make it. So we are moving the project into 2025, basically deleting this project from the current TIP. And then also for the I-95 ITS project, currently, the construction phase is in fiscal year 2023, and it's not going to make it. The latest estimate is that it's going to be in fiscal year 2026. So we are moving this project into 2026. Of all those projects programmed in the current TIP, of all those project and project phases in fiscal year 2023, all of the projects have funds authorized except these two. So just want to let you know we are implementing the TIP, and I think it's pretty good status. So you only have two projects that are not making it. And then the last amendment we want to do is for the transit improvement. This project, actually the federal funds were authorized in fiscal year 2022. So CAT, because they got the funds, they now, this is for the ferry boat construction. So they can just go out for a bid. But the problem is that the bid came in $7 million more than the cost estimate. The original cost estimate is about $3.2 million. So you have the federal portion from FTA. So you have $2.56 million. And then the CAT portion, CAT match is about $640,000. But the bid came in and then the bid is like $10 million. So you still have the federal dollars, but CAT has to come up with some additional funds. I think they are coordinating with Chatham County, probably get additional SPLOST funds to come up with this, because everything is so expensive now because of inflation and materials, everything. So we want to reflect this in the current TIP, even if this is the federal portion is in fiscal year 2022. But we are still under this TIP until the new TIP is adopted. So we need to make sure the information is accurate in the document. Any questions?
Yes. I understand that the CAT solicited bids, and you said the bid they approved was too high. I mean, came over high.
Yeah. Couldn't you have
asked for other bids, you know, start the bidding process over again?
Depending on like how many bids they got, I'm not sure about the CAT process, but for the highway process, normally when GDOT solicited bids for highway projects, so they can only select the lowest bid.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that CAT will do the same thing. They probably
have, so.
Yeah, yes. have several bids, and this might be the lowest one.
It's remarkable that it would be so much higher than what was budgeted for it. But
yeah,
it happens.
Yeah, actually, I really don't know where this like $3.2 million estimate, where does this come from? Because normally the ferry boat probably wouldn't be that cheap. So my guess is probably the original cost estimate is too low.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have a similar project, the Truman Indian Park Trail Phase 2B. The current cost estimate is about $3.89 million. I don't think that we can get that built at $3.89 million, because this segment is from Durang Avenue to 52nd Street. So it will connect to Daffin Park. Mm-hmm. And the southern portion from Durang Avenue to Lake Mare, that one is actually less complicated. This one is more complicated. So even that one costs like $5 million. So this one definitely will cost more. But City of Savannah, when we got the information from TCC, the bid probably will go out in a week. So we will see what the bid looks like. So my estimate is probably will be much, much higher than $4 million, because this segment is more complicated than the previous one. That one costs $5 million, so there's no way this one is going to be 3.89. But we will see. So at that time, we will see whether the City of Savannah, if they have the local money, they can come with it. But if they need additional money, they might come to the MPO for help. So we will see.
Thank you.
No further comments.
Okay.
We can move on to item four, reapportionment, MPA boundary.
Yeah, Aisha will do this one.
Good evening, everyone. I'll just go through this quickly. So the Core MPO is in the process of updating its planning boundary. So the focus of this presentation will specifically be on that planning boundary and planning area update. So an MPO must have a defined planning area boundary, and that planning area boundary is based off of the census, and specifically in this case, the 2020 census. And so we are revising our boundary using the Savannah urban area, and then also areas expected to be urbanized within the next 20 years. So some of the process within creating this boundary was we put together a working group to review and revise the draft MPA boundary and have discussion on which areas should be included and which areas shouldn't be included within this new boundary. And so we met with this working group and then also Effingham and Bryan County over the last few months, starting in March. And we recently had a in-person and virtual workshop on June 2nd just to further discuss this boundary. And with that, after all of that input from Effingham, Bryan, and the working group, and then also using census data, this is the new proposed core MPO boundary. So within this draft boundary, you can see that there are gains in Effingham County. So about half of Effingham County would be included into this boundary. Portions of Springfield and Guyton would be cut off. But we discussed this with Effingham County, and they were okay with that as a cutoff point. Additionally, Pembroke would be included within this proposed boundary. And then more portions of southern Bryan County would be included in this boundary. And then this is just a comparison of the current boundary, which is orange, compared to the new proposed boundary in blue. And so you can see that there are major gains northward and then also westward. So are there any questions?
What about the two counties that were cut off, as you called it? How did they feel about that? You said they were represented in the old boundary, but now they would not be in the proposed boundary.
So are you talking about Effingham County?
You said there were two counties that were cut off.
Oh, two cities? You mean Guyton and Springfield?
Yes.
So we discussed this with Effingham County.
Well, the cities actually, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we discussed this with Effingham County, and from what we learned is that above this line, there's not even a huge population, and some areas don't have water, sewer, electricity, because it's just so sparsely populated. So Effingham County was more comfortable with leaving the boundary here, where most of the population actually lives.
Thank you, Asia.
Okay.
No other comments. We can move to item 5, the 2050 MTP update.
Okay, there are several things that are ongoing for the 2050 MTP update. The first thing is the socioeconomic data development. GDOT accepted the 2020 SE data already. They actually kicked back some comments, but since at that time we didn't have the staff members to work on this, so we couldn't address the comments. And we actually have, now we have a new staff member, Edward Morrow. He's the interim for the development of services. But he has a lot of expertise on data. So he's going to help us with this, and he's working with the IT and the SAGES to, have this, to work on this probably, have this done by the end of June, by the end of this month, because they are developing some kind of application, like coding system. So we got some REMI data from GDOT, so we're going to disaggregate that information into the TAZs. So that is SE data development. And then for the travel demand model, Asia completed the travel demand model check for Bryan County and Effingham County in terms of functional roadway, functional classifications, and number of lanes. And then we stopped the work because we didn't have the staff again. And now we got actually Dara. She's our intern. So Dara is working on this now. So Dara is working on Chatham County, and she's going to have this done by the end of this month as well. And, also I think we sent GDOT the first and third, first, second networks. So we still owe them third, fourth, and fifth. So the third network basically would be, it will be developed in coordination with the TIP, the new TIP, because that's existing project, existing and committed. Committed means that you have construction funds, programmed. And the fourth network will be, you have a right-of-way funds committed. And then the last network would be, you have a preliminary engineering funds. So we are going to develop that in coordination with TIP development. And Asia has already covered the MPO boundary issue. That this is very important because for our 2050 plan, GDOT financial planning, financial budget, like budgeting office will provide revenue estimates. It cannot be based on the previous boundary anymore. It has to be based on this new boundary. So they have to give us that number, and that will kick off the financial plan development because the MTP has to be financially constrained. So you have to have the revenue first, and then you decide what projects to fit into all those revenue stream. And then the contributing plans, the corn POs, freight transportation plan is ongoing, urban funding model study is ongoing, and then the CAP master transit plan is going to wrap up this month and probably in July. And then the transit development plan probably will wrap up in July as well. So we will have all that information. And the US 80 corridor study will wrap up in September. And then the Chatham County's three studies will kick off probably in July. So all of those moving targets. And so we should be able to incorporate a lot of that information into the 2050 plan. And we will also have a new staff member starting in July who's going to work on the CMP. So by the end of the day, you have the revenues and this is the first time that we implemented all the big projects, big item projects like the I-16, I-95 interchange. So that's like $300 million projects. So we implement those. We should have some revenue to kick off some new projects in. So we will see what kind of projects we have. So we will build a matrix just to see all the recommendations from all these plans. So that will be for that. And then we will have I have a resiliency planning over here. Anna, who started 2 weeks ago. Anna is going to manage the urban flooding model study, and then she's also going to do some research on resiliency planning, so how we incorporate resiliency into the 2050 plan. And Asia is also going to do some research on affordable housing because this is also emphasis area, linking the housing with transportation planning. So we will also have an angle to do that. And then we are also, Sally is going to set up some meetings. We're going to start to talk about our second round of public engagement. Because the first round, we collected a lot of input and we need to go back to the public to tell them what we have collected. And also with the plans that I have outlined over there, what are the recommendations from these plans? Because our project list for the final 2050 plan will come from these recommendations. So we want to present to the public what we are thinking, what are some of these recommendations that you will see. If they can be incorporated, they will be incorporated. If they cannot, at least they can be included in the unconstrained project list. So these would be the things that we are working on right now.
The initial comments you got from GDOT, what did they focus on? What was some of the feedback?
Actually, GDOT, the comments that I'm thinking of would be the survey. Remember we did the survey? Because we did the sort of text survey. We got how many?
400 something, right?
So we got 400 surveys, and also we also got some comments on, you know, we also have like a map, so you can click on something over there. So Asia already did some presentation to you before about the surveys, response to the surveys, and then also response to the map surveys, but the public hasn't seen that yet. So we need to go back to the public, and also, strange enough, we still continuously to receive survey responses now. It's just like one or two, like it's not every day. Not when we kick off the survey, you got like 10, 5 every day. But now it's like probably one in 2 weeks and one, in 10 days or something. So, but we still continue to collect those. So we will incorporate all that and into the report, because this will be also be included in our participation plan for as appendix to the 2050 MTP. And also will influence that the survey results will also influence how we prioritize projects. If people want like more spend more on bicycle pedestrian projects, maybe we can allocate more revenues. Because previously what we did is we think we get about $500,000 transportation alternative funds. So we assume that we can only spend $500,000 each year. But right now, if people want more, maybe, I mean, 1 million a year. So, I mean, this is just, we just want to make sure that we're not neglecting the responses from the public, because we are taking that into consideration. Because depending on what people want, if they want like maintenance of roadways, maybe we need to allocate more funds on maintenance, street maintenance, than just adding capacities. So this would be something that we want to really, just tell the public we're not neglecting you. We are considering your contributions to the plan.
At the same token, you would not want to have the public think that by just requesting or wanting something is going to happen, though, right? Just by wanting it won't make it happen. If the public says, well, you know, what we want $500,000 worth of this, and you say we only have $500,000.
No, I'm just giving an example. If the public really want like, they want more trails, they want like separated bike lanes, they want to make sure their sidewalks are connected.
Understood you.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we have like significant amount of comments on that, we would think this will be a priority. So when we have the revenue stream, and we would decide how to allocate the revenues. So if we decide that we can allocate more funds to the bike path projects.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. The next one is the freight plan. Actually, the consultant did the presentation today. So basically, we are done with the needs assessment, and that includes the freight needs assessment, the land use assessment, and economic development assessment, environmental community impact scan analysis, all of that is done. So now our focus is the recommendations. The consultant actually gave a presentation at today's TCC meeting about the recommendations. So those would be including the land use recommendations, policy recommendations, and then this project infrastructure improvement recommendations. I just want to advertise that we are going to have a ADFAC committee meeting on Monday, next Monday at 10 o'clock in this room, and you can also join virtually. That's when the consultant will give the presentation, also handout. The handout will include the specific recommendations. So there are like more than 200 projects. You will see what's included in that. But those recommendations will be stratified into different categories, like I said, these are the recommendations for the land use, freight land use, and these are the recommendations for infrastructure. So that will be included in the handout. Just want to welcome you to that public meeting. It is a public meeting, but it will be held with the ADFAC committee meeting. So if you just go to Sally has already sent you the access to the CEC agenda, right? So you can just go to your CEC agenda and click on this link, so you will see it. So over here, so there's a link, so you can just click on the link and join the meeting. If you want to just do it virtually, if you just want to like do something at home, but you can click on it and you can just listen. So because this impacts all of us as well, the freight because of the port. So I will welcome you to join us on this.
Any questions or comments, Dr. Bramley?
No, none.
Thank you.
Ah, what did I do? What did I do? Oh, this is...
Hi, I'm Anna McQuarrie. I'm a new planner here at the MPC. I'm going to be focusing on resiliency-related projects. So one of my first projects I'm going to be working on is taking over the urban flooding model study. So I'm probably the fourth or fifth MPO project manager, and like I said earlier, hopefully take this thing into fruition and see it finished. So updates since April. I'm the new project manager, and I met with the project team lead, Dr. Matt Bilski, and I met with the entire UGA team yesterday. So right now, the MPC MPO staff is reviewing the study contracts with the UGA team to ensure a timely delivery of the expected products. There's been, I think, some confusion on when the products are due. And right now the contract says October 31st. The SWIM models, so the storm water management model and hydrographs are expected to be completed on time in July and August, but data availability and accuracy have been a challenge. And so I'm actually gonna receive an early draft of that next week. Other products are going to be expected closer to October, so that includes the social vulnerability metrics, financial stewardship, and project prioritization tool. We're hoping to have this thing completed in October as of now. Questions?
You mentioned the word confusion. Explain it a little better.
Yeah, it just so project management plan was submitted in January. It was updated from the original, sent in August, and it has some November deadlines for product delivery. However, the contract ends on October 31st. And so there have been multiple project managers on the MPO side of this. So maybe some of this information got lost or was not addressed earlier on, but we're working to address it now.
We'll come out of this one way.
I'm sorry?
We'll come out of this one way. It's going to work out, though.
Oh, yeah, it's going to work out. We're going to get the information. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the study. Yeah, they're working hard on it. So we're just making sure that products are delivered on time and people are paid accordingly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Number eight, the non-motorized transportation plan update.
Okay, so the core MPO is still in the process of updating its non-motorized transportation plan. And so this presentation will just go over some of what we're doing and some of what we're planning to do. So we have drafted some new chapters related to pedestrian and bike infrastructure, and some of the chapters that I'm most excited to introduce are infill development as a tool for creating a more walkable and bikeable town, the impact of urban heat on non-car travel, and then also what is a strode and how does it impact street safety. So I'm excited to introduce some new concepts to the non-motorized plan. Additionally, we are trying to track the non-motorized updates within the area. So within the original plan, there are over 400 projects listed in the current non-motorized transportation plan. And so we're trying to find the status of each of those projects. And this is especially difficult as most of the projects do not have a project ID. We're also documenting new trails, bike lanes, and sidewalks that might not be in the current plans. We're also exploring low-cost technology solutions for traffic calming. And this is because low-cost solutions could be easier to implement. Not all infrastructure safety has to be a huge investment or a lot of money, there are some less expensive ways that can also get results. We also identified common themes from open-ended responses on the public surveys. So I, along with Rithvika, we went through the open-ended responses on the survey and found some of the common areas that people were discussing. So one comment that came up a lot was regarding safety, and especially how many respondents feel that current infrastructure is unsafe for cyclists and pedestrians. Additionally, separation was another issue that respondents brought up. So no matter if the respondent primarily drove or if they biked, both groups still wanted some type of physical barrier or protection to separate cyclists and motorists. Connectivity was also a problem area that was identified by respondents, especially those that encounter roads where sidewalk coverage suddenly ends. And then policy and education was another important factor in non-motorized transportation. So many respondents want the community to be more knowledgeable of bike and pedestrian laws and then also bike and pedestrian safety practices. And this is just a word cloud of some other discussions that respondents brought up, such as access, greenways, bikeable, just to name a few. We also had a steering committee meeting on June 12th to discuss the bikeway map here. So during that steering committee meeting, the committee mostly agreed with this map except for just one segment. And they also heavily recommended that the networks that are along roads that have a high volume of traffic or have high speeds, they recommended that they be protected by some type of barrier or some type of separation. So a barrier that provides some width and then also maybe physical vertical barriers so that motorist traffic can stay separated from bike traffic. So some of the next steps within this process is using satellite images to observe gaps in sidewalk coverage, examining infrastructure characteristics of the most dangerous roadways for cyclists and pedestrians, and then also exploring the scoring criteria and methodology used by the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy. So the current plan does have a scoring criteria and methodology, and so we just wanted to review it and see if it's still relevant. And then in addition to that, that is not on that slide, I've been working really closely with Rithvika, who has a lot of skills in quantitative and qualitative analysis regarding non-motorized transportation. And so we have future plans such as examining the parameters for push factors to encourage more biking and more walking, and then also analyzing harm reduction strategies, and also analyzing crash data in GIS to identify crash hotspots. And the results of this quantitative and qualitative assessments will be better recommendations for bike lanes and sidewalks, and then also better project prioritization. Are there any questions?
With the MPO boundaries being expanded, will that likely lead to additional projects added to the non-motorized transportation plan?
I think that could be a possibility. As you see from the map here, the bike network map, some of it does extend outside of the current planning boundary and then outside of the proposed planning boundary. So we are looking at it as from more of a regional basis. But of course we can't spend money outside of our boundary. So.
Thank you. We can move to item number 9, FY 2024-2027 TIP development.
Our current TIP covers 2021 to 2024. As you know, 2023 ends on June 30th and 2024 starts on July the 1st. So we have a 1 year left in the current TIP. So we need to adopt a new TIP before the current TIP expires. Normally we do this. Well, ideally, we should have already adopted a new TIP 2024 to 2027 in June, but it doesn't work out because there are so many moving targets. We did get some supporting documentation from GDOT, including the revenues for the next 4 years, and the lump sum project list and the project authorization list. And the proposed project list, but some of the proposed project list is, still needs to be worked on because the MPO controls the Y230 funds and Y301 funds. And those really, GDOT cannot dictate us like which projects you need to program those. So we actually have to consider the results from our previous like call for projects process. So we will have more projects in there. Another thing happened, we did the project prioritization approach. We adopted that approach in April. We actually already presented that information to you. So now I'm working on development of this new TIF document. But since it's multimodal, so it includes both highway and transit and bike and pad. The problem is like transit information is really not ready yet. I did receive some information from CAT, but there are a lot of out of date information because probably CAT doesn't have the staff member to work on this or who really understands this. So we actually at the TCC we decided that we just have to sit down with CAT just one by one just to talk about it. I mean, what kind of information needs to be included over there? Why this is the out-of-date information. So, I mean, if we have to just hold their hand and teach them that, we will do that probably next week. And then on the highway side, there's also moving target. We did have the like revenue projection for the next 4 years, but we also, because of the debt ceiling, discussion, we certainly have a $1.42 million of COVID relief funds that we need to spend. So we actually got those money spent very quickly, probably within 2 days. I think it's like May 31st to June 2nd. Those were the days that when we spent all that money. But that also means some of the, because some projects like the three Chatham County studies and the Green Island Trail project got those money because you have to spend that money. So you got to have like a project ready to spend that money. Because we spend that money, that means $1.42 million of combined Y230 and Y301 funds have been released back to the pot. And also for the Truman Indian Park Trail, because of the cost estimate, remember I was talking about $3.9 million? Yeah, that's their cost estimate. We actually had more than $6 million programmed for that project, but because of their cost estimate is $3 million, so we can only authorize $3.9 million. So that means at least $2 million will be released back to the pot as well. So right now it's just like sitting in GDOT, like financial management office. So we really don't know. And the thing is, if we release $2 million, $2 million, of Y230 funds, we cannot automatically add that to the revenue in fiscal year 2024 because they distribute that into May. I don't know how much will be distributed in 2024, how much will be in 2025, how much will be 2026, how much will be 2027. So we are still waiting for GDOT to send us that information because the TIP is financially constrained by year. So it's like if you have $1 million in 2024, you cannot spend $1 million plus $1. So you just have to like spend no more than $1 million. But right now we just don't have the revenues because of this released funds. So that's why I'm in limbo. So, but I was able to finish all the other chapters, not dealing with this financial balance. So all the other chapters, introduction about the TIP, introduction about the MPO, all the obligation lump sum, all those. I mean, anything that is definite is already completed, but it's something like in limbo. I'm still working on it. So I talked with GDOT today. The GDOT planning has already asked for like the updated revenue projection from the financial management office, but so far we haven't got that information yet. So this week and probably only tomorrow, I think, And then next week, I'm going to work with CAT and GDOT, try to find, make this information available to us so that we can develop this draft tip. The official public comment period starts on July the 19th. So we still have probably 2 weeks to work on this. But the thing is, Federal Highway Administration and Federal Transit Administration, they want to review the preliminary draft before we go to the public, official public comment period. So we already sent whatever we have to them, those completed chapters to them. So they have already started to review. So by the time that we finish the financial balance, the financial plan, we will forward them that information and they can provide comments. So hopefully we will incorporate all of that before July 19th. And so that we can start the comment period. But if that doesn't work out, if the like CAT information is not available, GDOT revenue information is not available, we probably will shoot for October adoption. But as of now, I'm still kind of positive that we might be able to adopt the TIP in August. Any questions? Dr. Bradley? Falling asleep.
This awkward situation you describe. I'm sorry, admission crunch. Let me ask you this. Is this going to happen again, you think? One never knows the future, but you know.
There are a lot of things going on. It's beyond our control. So we can only work on something that within our control. So we can try to make sure that information is accurate. Okay. That whatever we can do is accurate. But something beyond our control, we just don't know. I mean, if you want me to do the most important thing for MTP and TAP is fiscal constraint. It's for MTP is fiscally constrained by cost band. See, you have cost band 1, 2, 3. So you have revenue in cost band 1. So you have certain projects. So the cost add up cannot be more than that revenue. For TIP, it's by year. So it's not by cost, it's by year. So like 2024, I have the proposed project list, but I don't know how it goes against the revenue because I don't have the revenue. So, I mean, we can just do whatever we can right now and hope for the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 10, MOU and bylaws updates.
Yeah, if we adopt the boundary as it is, and then we need to update our MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, basically it outlines what the MPO is, what the MPO's roles and responsibilities are, and what the GDOT's roles and responsibilities are, and what the municipalities' roles and modal representatives like CAT, airport, GPA, what their roles and responsibilities are, and what jurisdictions like Chatham County, City of Savannah, Pooler, Garden City, so what their roles and responsibilities are. And Appendix A is the boundary we have talked about, but Appendix B is the fee structure. So now we're exploring two different fee structures based on this boundary. Because currently, like in Chatham County, the county pays 25% of the municipality's share. So we might explore, like, if the county doesn't pay this. So so we will see what the difference, how much would be the difference. And also, for the bylaws update, we actually do need to have your input on this because we need to restructure CEC. And ACAD. I mean, we struggle to have a quorum. We struggle to have the vacancies filled. And we struggle to have our own mission, basically. So what is our mission? So we are here to present to you the MTP, TIP, freight plan, urban flooding model, non-motorized transportation plan. So especially for TIP amendments, it's just like a rubber stamping. It's not good. So we want the CEC and probably CEC and ACAD to have their own mission. You have just like we have the freight committee, freight advisory committee. They don't meet bi-monthly. they meet as needed. So they can meet like twice a year at minimum. But when we start the fleet plan development, they can meet like every 2 months or quarterly. I mean just depending on the progress. So we actually want the CEC to have a mission. So I mean, we're also proposing to have a like bicycle pedestrian committee, new committee. So they will have their own bylaws and the membership and dedicated a mission, like probably implement the bike pedestrian plan. So we want the CEC and ACAT to really consider what they want to do and what the membership should look like, because we cannot just do this. You have 15 seats, but you have like 8 or 9 vacant, and then we constantly don't have a quorum, so it would be a problem. So we probably will have like meetings with you in July and August. So really focus on, I mean, just think about what you need to do, what you want to do. I mean, what kind of input you want to provide. So just give you some idea on that so that you can start to think about it.
Personally, I am in agreement with everything and the combining possibly of the CAC and the ACAT. I'd be interested to see if the members of the ACAT feel the same way. I imagine they're having the same struggles as we have as far as people showing up.
Yeah, ACAT, as it stands today, have 26 voting members, but we struggle to even have like 7. Yeah, which is quorum. So you have more than 20 don't show up. So also we present the same information. I mean, we have 2 new staff members over here, Anna and Dara. When they sit through all these 4 meetings, they see that we present the same thing. I think every committee should be different. They should have their own focus, right? For ACAT, we would present the same information. They do like the tip amendment and rubber stamp that. But they just, okay, we will if they have a quorum, they will endorse that. But that's it. But they become very active when we started to talk about like transit service, paratransit service. So maybe that is their focus. So they just need to focus on that. I mean, you can still have meetings, but you need to have your own agenda. So you don't need to just focus on all of these.
And I imagine the lack of a clear mission leads to a lot of the individuals who don't show up because they don't understand the importance of what difference they're making by attending. So like you say, having a meeting where we can come together and actually define mm-hmm. what our mission is and our goals and objectives are.
Yes.
Would I'm sure lead to higher attendance going forward.
That's what we are hoping for. So there might be a connection like for ACAT connection with bike path or transit. I mean, if they just want to focus on bike path or transit or connection because it's accessible transportation. So you want to make sure they focus on this accessible part of it. But as of today, we just go through the same agenda. I mean, where do you see accessibility? So not much. That's why when they started to talk about it, so it's like during the agency report, when CAT starts to give their presentation, that's where they got interested in because that's where they can provide input. So we just need to think about the whole thing, whole structure. But I think there might be a reason why it was established this way, but that was before my days. But I just think that right now we really need to, we don't want to waste the people's time. So we just want to like really take their input. So to make sure they come to the meeting is worthwhile.
I'm not as accommodating as my colleague here. Seems to me that people are paid to come to meetings. Some people are staff. So the fact they have to make reports to the 2 or 3 different groups, the same report, And these, and they feel that these people who are getting, receiving these reports are not focused enough. It doesn't bother me that much, really. I think that there's a need for a citizen participation committee, and that committee needs to not just limit itself, you know, unnecessarily to very small things. It seems to me that, as I understand it, the purpose of this committee is to have the first pass at certain stuff, you know, the staff are thinking about, and I'll probably give some input on that. So when the board meets, the board knows that someone has looked at these things and have done this. I'm not certain that it.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that CEC cannot provide input, but it's like we need to think about like restructuring how you can better provide input. Because right now it's like you can, I remember several agenda items were declined or denied by CEC, right? But you were override by the MPO board because the MPO board still approved them because your role is the advisory role. So I would rather like you can provide something, provide the input that is more meaningful, that can can make a difference than right now. It's just yes, it's like a routine.
Well, I sympathize with you on that, and I approve. But I'm thinking that the board can override. Any recommendations coming from this group, regardless of how focused this group had been in doing, coming up with those ideas or approving those recommendations. I guess what I'm thinking is that one or two meetings between now and in the fall.
Yeah,
it's probably necessary, but I don't think it's necessarily going to accomplish what we need to do. We should have some time ago thought about this.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking that it's not as simple or simplistic as it's made to appear that the people aren't coming to the meetings because they don't really appreciate the importance of what they're doing. I think that they really have been asked by their county commissioners and other people to serve on committees, and they agree to do so. And I don't think that they really have thought about what they were doing.
Yeah,
so it's not that they're weighed and assessed and simply say, well, I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I think that this is time to think about our mission. And also, if you want to change the format, you don't have to like do in person. If you think like virtual participation, you might have more people. Maybe change the meeting time and date, or if people don't want to meet that often, or if you if we're updating like participation plan was supposedly the CEC was providing, guidance for the participation plan update. Maybe during the plan update, you don't need to like meet by month. You probably need to meet like monthly or even weekly if we make progress or something. So, it's just, we need to think about like meeting time, the format, the membership. Just the whole thing. So I think outside of the box. To think that how we can make this process better.
Well, the process needs to improve because the absence of a quorum suggests that the people aren't convinced how important these meetings are, the people who aren't here. So obviously there's a problem. And
yeah.
I'm thinking that, and I agree that the problem is not simply a matter of just having a focus. The question is also how frequently we meet and what we do and sort of and how we conduct ourselves at these meetings as well.
Yeah,
we need to re-examine our roles to some extent.
Yes,
but I'm thinking
yes.
The board should give some direction as to what they thought they were trying to do with this book group.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that we are not going to give you the presentation on the MTP and TIP or that. You can still discuss that, but it's just we need to reformat it. So you don't have to maybe you have a like focal item at this meeting, but all these would be information or something like that. Different things to think about.
It's food for thought, I agree.
Huh?
It's food for thought. something to think about.
Yes. And I think we will probably start to schedule individual meetings like with CEC, with ECAT, with TCC, with ADFAC, because every advisory committee, even MPO board, because it happens to be, yeah, because now we are proposing to have election for the MPO board. Right now, the chairman really declined, and he's very, very insistent on that. But we are trying to change that. But it's just, I mean, there will be changes, but it just, we will meet with each individual committees and to decide how we want to approach this.
One thing that doesn't concern me, but something to think about, that there's an expression, the dog, the tail wagging, you know, the dog, really. The question is, how far should staff structure or guide or direct or define what committees do? I agree that you sometimes say, well, you can say we as staff see what's going on and we have an opinion and we know that our time is being wasted to some extent. We know that these people need to be better organized and present themselves more professionally and so on and forth. But there probably needs to be a limit to what staff should be able to do. Not sometimes say, well, we call you together because we want to change. This is what we think you should do. This is the change we propose. And then you move because you've been told to move in that direction. I'm thinking that we need to think about that as well.
Yeah, let's schedule individual meetings with the committees so that we can decide what we really want to do. Because right now, it's just like, I think the way current way, it just doesn't work. I mean, we struggle with the CEC having a quorum. So
the,
I mean,
the quorum issue is not, it's simply explained away, as has been suggested earlier, that people
or,
don't know what they're doing, so that they don't come to the meetings because they don't think how important it is. It's not that simple. People just are asked to serve on committees, and they are on the wrong or whatever, and they do so agree. But don't come. It's not that they've assessed what the committee is doing or think about, you know, confused as to what they should be doing. They simply don't come at all.
Well, I think the best way to decide what the reason is that individuals don't show up to our meetings is to just ask them. And so maybe that is in that meeting.
Yeah.
Is where we get down to where that is, because it has to be some reason. I feel like you and I are the only consistent ones.
Tony
Abbott extremely consistent as well. Don't take that the wrong way. But there's a ton of people listed on the website, and I don't see them often.
Yeah, you have like people assigned by the city. So you have like 2-year terms. But I mean, for those 2 years, I have never seen this person, so I don't even know who they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I remember years ago, I mentioned the idea that we should ask the appointing authorities to, somebody should call it the appointing authorities saying to report on these things to people aren't showing up at meetings and ask them do something about that. I think this is not my first time on this meeting, this committee. Yeah. And three or four years ago, if you look at the record, flexible and far back, you will see that I suggest we do something like that.
Yeah, we actually do have a procedure, I think, in the bylaws that says that if you miss like 2 consecutive meetings or something, we will send a letter to the appointing government that you need to like reappoint somebody or something like that. We do have that. And also during the quorum PO board meetings, I mean, we see those people, we always remind them that you need to appoint somebody if you don't have appointed. So we do that, but it hasn't been working out. So we just need to find a way so that it can work out.
Any other questions or comments, Dr. Brantley? Thank you.
Okay.
I believe that was our last status report. We have project status updates listed for you all to review on your own. Our next CAC committee meeting is scheduled for August 17th at 5:30 p.m. Adjourned.
Okay. We will meet you before that.